one of the really big challenges of publishing my first novel was finding my way back to that place of aloneness, that sort of sense of solitude where it's just me in a room with the work. And that's, to me, that's where the meaning is. That's where the joy is.
This is Finding the Throughline, the show that gives you inside access to honest conversations about the creative process. I'm Kate Hanley. Welcome back to a new week on Finding the Throughline, where I am talking to writer Antonia Engress. Antonia is the author of Sirens and Muses, a story that starts off as a campus novel about artists, but then blooms into an exploration of the intersection of home and community, with individualism and seeking to stand out, set against the backdrop of the New York art world and the Occupy Wall Street movement. Sirens and Muses was named one of the best books of the year by Glamour magazine and won the Minnesota Book Award. And Antonia was recently named a Creative Fellow of the National Endowment for the Arts. I loved this novel, and I love that I get to ask Antonia my list of mildly invasive questions about why and how she does her particular creative work. Antonia, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's just awesome to be here with you. I didn't know if I was going to tell people this or not, but I guess I am going to tell people is that we know each other because I live in Providence and you went to Brown. And when you were a student at Brown, you were our babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's right.
And I'm just like, what a cool full circle moment to have you here now.
Agreed. Yeah.
So how this works, so that you know, Antonia, and so that our listeners know, is that I'm going to ask you questions that fall into three basic categories. And those categories are practical matters, inner stuff, and what's coming up. So if you're listening to the free version of this podcast, which I completely welcome and understand, each section will come in its own short, easy to consume episode with a few ads thrown in to keep the lights on around here. And if you want to become a paid subscriber, you'll get the full interview in one ad-free episode. To upgrade to paid, visit me on Substack at katehanley.substack.com. All right, I think that covers our basic itinerary. Let's get things rolling. Antonia, this is kind of a big question. Feel free to answer it as in-depth or as synopsized, if that's a word. Form as you like, but what drew you to the work that you're doing now?
So I am a novelist, and for pretty much as long as I can remember, I've been drawn to fiction and to storytelling. I was one of those kids who loved to read and loved making up stories. I started writing when I was pretty young, middle or high school. And when I went to college, I studied comparative literature. So, you know, I studied essentially storytelling and have really been writing seriously since I was pretty young. Like most people, it took me a long time to get to a place where I was writing publishable work, but I've certainly thought of myself as a storyteller and as first an aspiring novelist and then a novelist since I was in my teens.
I got it. And tell me about that. You said it took a while, as it does for most people, to get to the point where you had publishable work. Like, what did that process look like?
You know, I think a lot, it was often frustrating. I think like a lot of young writers or writers just starting out, I wanted to get from point A to point B as quickly as I could. And one of the things that I've learned as I've gotten older, and one of the pieces of advice that I often give aspiring young writers when they ask me for my best advice, is to be okay with writing work that's never going to see the light of day. I would sometimes, you know, I remember being in my early 20s and laboring over stories or chapter, you know, novel chapters that went nowhere, that I ended up tossing, and really feeling as though it was a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. And what I see very clearly now is that it absolutely wasn't a waste, even though nobody's going to read those that writing, and thank God, because you know, it is not it's not fit for human consumption. But that work was teaching me how to write. There's really no way to learn how to do it other than doing it. And that means that for a long time, there's going to be a gap between what you're capable of and what you envision your work as being. Ira Glass has a really good quote that I don't remember off the top of my head, but I will try and sort of paraphrase, which is this idea that when you're starting out, you have this grand vision of what your art should look like, and then you have what you're capable of. And generally, there's a really big distance between those two things. And the more you practice, the more you're sort of narrowing that distance between what you dream your work is going to look like and sound like, read like, and what you're actually capable of. And again, whenever I talk to young writers, the number one thing that I say is, don't be afraid to write with the expectation that no one is ever going to read the work that you write. It's all, everything that you do is preparation for the work that's eventually going to go out into the world and be made available for public consumption. And it takes the time that it takes.
Yeah. Well, now you're in this position where you've published your first novel and it was very well received. And that is like an enviable position to be in. And so I'm curious, like, what is keeping, so now it's not that drive necessarily to get the work out to a wider audience, right? Because that has sort of happened. So what is keeping you connected to your work, and how are you going to keep going?
Well, one of the things that I've found, and I'm I'm sorry to burst the bubble of anyone working towards publication, but publishing a book really doesn't, unless you're extraordinarily lucky and you know you become Stephen King, it really doesn't change your life. Mm-hmm. It does not solve all your problems. Hopefully it gives you a little bit of a boost and a little bit of money to keep doing your work, but it's generally pretty anticlimactic. I know a lot of writers have sort of this period of almost postpartum depression after their first book comes out. I know that I did, because you have all these expectations about how it's going to change your life. And really, like, at the end of the day, you're still the same person. You still have the same problems, but you've published a book. So one of the things that I had to learn in like the year after my book came out, when I was sort of dealing with that now what feeling, was that the joy and the meaning have to be the work itself. If you're seeking validation through publication, you're going to be really disappointed, because that feeling, though you will feel validated, but that feeling is really fleeting. Eventually, the world's going to move on. Publishing has a very short attention span. If you're lucky, your book will get some publicity. And then after about 3 months, everyone is going to move on. And you're going to sort of be left feeling like, okay, what's next? And for me, the answer was to write another book and to find the joy in that, in the process of being alone with the work and losing myself in a world that I was creating. And it was really hard to get to that place, because when you publish, you suddenly have all these external critics, right? Your book is on Goodreads. I do not recommend that any authors go on Goodreads and read reviews of their work. But, you know, if you're lucky, people are reviewing your work. They're reacting to your work. People in your life are reacting to your work, but also strangers. You're getting reactions from strangers, and you really can't control how people read your work, how they interpret it, or how they react to it. And that can be really destabilizing and scary. So for me, one of the really big challenges of publishing my first novel was finding my way back to that place of aloneness, that sort of sense of solitude where it's just me in a room with the work. And that's, to me, that's where the meaning is. That's where the joy is. And it was not easy to find. And I'm sure eventually, hopefully, I'll publish the second book that I'm working on, and I'll have to do it all over again. And I'll have to find my way back to that sort of place of aloneness.
Oh.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I just happen to know that you, as we're talking, are pregnant and about to give birth to your first child.
Yes.
And I think it's really cool. It's not, aloneness is going to be a different, you're going to have a different relationship to it, I think. And, but that, you know what else? It's going to feel so extra nourishing and golden when you do find it. And I really love how you talk about how you have to find the joy and meaning in the work itself. Thanks for sharing that. What kinds of habits, practices, or attitudes help you stay creative?
So for me, I love that you use the word habit, because for me, habit is really important. Just sitting down every single day and writing a little bit. And not everyone writes every day. I don't want to be prescriptive. I know writers who, for example, have teaching careers and only write in the summer, during university breaks, during school breaks. I have a good friend who, quote, the way she describes it is she binge writes. She'll write a massive amount in one sitting, and then she won't write for a few weeks, and then she'll come back to it and do another binge write. So any way that you get the work done is valid. But for me, it's been really important to develop the habit of sitting down every single day when I'm actively, you know, but right now I've sort of thrown that out the window because I'm in the last month of my pregnancy and it's getting dressed in the morning is hard enough. But when I am not at the late stages of gestating a child, I try to sit down every single day and hit 500 words. And they don't have to be good words. And often they're not. Most of the time they're not. But making sure that I'm exercising that muscle every single day, making sure that I'm touching the work every single day and looking at it and rereading what I wrote the day before and dipping back, however briefly, into the world of the story that I'm writing is really, really important. I'm not a particularly fast writer, but you can write a novel 500 words at a time. It might take you a few years, but I am living proof that you can chip away at something that seems insurmountable. Rewriting a novel is a very daunting task, right? Books are long. They take a long time. But if you do a little bit every day, and that's also another piece of advice that I give students, don't try and tackle it all at once. Break it up into manageable chunks and do a tiny bit every day. And that will add up. And eventually you'll have a whole book.
Excellent. So it's time for you to sit down and write those 500 words. I am curious, where are you? Do you have beverages? Do you have snacks? What tools are you using? What are the practicalities of that?
So I used to have an office in my house. That office is now a nursery for the little girl that we're about to have. One of the very cool things that my husband, who is an architect, did for me this past summer was he converted the bike shed in our backyard. He insulated it and converted it into an office. We jokingly call it the she shed.
Okay.
But it's a little freestanding office. So I have like my little 20-second commute to work across the backyard. And generally, I have coffee. And I use an internet blocker called Freedom because I have very little self-control. So that's been really, really important, by the way. Highly recommend Freedom. It costs $40 a year for a subscription.
Okay.
And you can tell it, if you have procrastination issues like I do, you can set up a daily schedule where you can tell it what websites you wanted to block, what apps you wanted to block, and for how long. So I allow myself 2 hours of time wasters a day. So that's things like social media, kind of internet junk food. And then the rest of the time I block myself from accessing those websites. So that's important to me. generally, I don't dive right into the work. I'll warm up by reading like a few pages of whatever book I happen to be reading at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's really helpful to kind of warm up by consuming somebody else's creative work. And eventually I find what happens is a really lovely turn of phrase will sort of trigger that creative impulse in me, and I'll turn to the work and I'll do some writing. Eventually I'll run out of steam or I'll have to go pee. And when I come back to the computer, you know, I'll take a little break. And when I come back to the computer, I sort of do the same thing. I start by reading a few pages of whatever book I happen to be engrossed in at the time. Or sometimes, you know, I'll read a poem, like a little snippet of somebody else's work. And that's usually enough to sort of get me back into the flow.
Oh, I love that reading is part of your writing process. I mean, I know that writers need to read, right? Because we do need to get inspired, and just it helps fill the memory banks, or like feed the AI program, right? Of what word combinations are possible so that we can then rearrange them in our own voice. But just that you're actually sitting at your desk and reading something until like the urge to write something of your own overpowers you. I am totally trying that. I am getting so many ideas for how to broaden and expand and experiment with my own writing process. Thank you for sharing that. Are there habits or practices or attitudes that help you take care of yourself? So not necessarily directly related to creativity, although they often overlap.
So for me, I, like a lot of people, I battle with my inner perfectionist.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. Yes, I can't wait.
So often just telling myself it doesn't have to be perfect, it just has to exist. Mm-hmm. And now I am in the position of having written a whole novel before, written and edited and published a novel, so I know that I can do it. But the self-doubt never really goes away. I remember when I first sat down to start my second book, which is now sort of in its last stages of editing, but when I first sat down to write it and really had a very little idea of what it was going to look like, I felt this huge sense of dread and this sense of like, oh God, I can't do it again. The first time was a fluke. I don't actually have it in me to do this again. This is, it's too hard. And what got me through that was reminding myself that I had been in this exact same position before, that I had had these same fears before, and that the fears were not a reflection of reality, that they're normal, that everybody experiences them, and that the work that I did that day did not have to be the work that was going to be published someday. It just had to exist somewhere on my computer so that I could expand it and edit it and eventually transform it into what it wants to be down the line. So I think really reminding myself that nothing I produce the first time is going to be perfect, that I probably will throw it away, and that's okay. And to really just trust the process. In fact, for a long time, I had a little note card above my desk that said, trust the process, just to remind myself that I had been through it before and I can do it again.
Excellent. All right. Well, that concludes our section of questions about how Antonia gets her work done and keeps going. Come back on Wednesday when I'm going to be diving more into Antonia's thought process, those doubts and how she deals with them. And also, Antonia, give you a chance to climb up on your soapbox and share some things that maybe some beliefs that you've had to rewrite and that you wish we would all rewrite if we could. And thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Finding the Throughline airs one interview per week, broken up into three episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. Skip the ads and get each interview in one longer episode by becoming a paid subscriber at katehanley.substack.com. Even if you aren't ready to get out your wallet just yet, become a free subscriber at katehanley.substack.com and receive the full show notes with links to everything my guests and I cover. However you listen, thank you. Finding the Throughline is edited by Sound Advice Strategies. Connect with me on Instagram at Kate Hanley Author. Here's a little preview of what's to come in part two of this interview.
the novel that I'm finishing up now, I did two major rewrites. So the first draft, the first version of it, I'd used really nothing, maybe a few paragraphs.
Wow.
So I threw away maybe like 50,000 to 60,000 words and then just completely started from scratch. And then next draft, I threw away maybe 50% and rewrote from there. So really a lot of it gets tossed in the garbage pail at that early stage.
I'm Kate Hanley, and this is Finding the Throughline. More to come on Wednesday.